Gibson's created this world, and you get the sense that, I don't know, maybe as a reader, we're jacking into this world.
Yeah, I like that.
Like we plug in and we enter it. There's no instruction manual that comes with it. It's a really cool description of cyberspace. This is on page 51 of my copy here. It says, cyberspace, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation, by children being taught mathematical concepts, a graphic representation of data abstracted from the banks of every computer in the human system, unthinkable complexity, lines of light ranged in the non-space of the mind, clusters and constellations of data, like city lights receding. It's cool. A collective hallucination.
Yeah, it's
a really cool description of cyberspace. This is on page 51 of my copy here. It says, cyberspace, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation, by children being taught mathematical concepts, a graphic representation of data abstracted from the banks of every computer in the human system, unthinkable complexity, lines of light ranged in the non-space of the mind, clusters and constellations of data, like city lights receding. It's cool. A collective hallucination.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, you got to piece things together. And some things are just never explained. Some things are explained later. And I think this also requires like a conscious commitment to being comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Because you're reading it.
A little trust in the author.
It has this sort of, I don't know, at times discombobulating, psychedelic kind of quality to it. And I know there's moments where I felt like that. I'm here with a man who's usually kept on ice and only thawed for special occasions, like the rereading of William Gibson's Neuromancer, a man who's more than just a meat puppet. Eric, how you doing?
Hey, Chris, it's nice to be here on Life, Death, Sci-Fi. Like you said, Neuromancer by William Gibson. What a book. And in this episode, I'm sure we're going to talk about our main character, Henry Dorsett Chase, who is quite the guy, and what a cyberpunk is. I'm sure that's going to come up in our conversation. And what is a neuromancer anyway? That's a mysterious title. And I think my favorite parts of this story were the settings. We've got Chiba City in Japan. I love that. And you and I have been to Japan in some pretty techie places. And then there's Freeside, which is just the megalopolis of the East Coast, I think. And the Tesser-Ashpool satellite home of the super rich people that kind of focus this story. I don't know if that's how I want to say that or not, but we'll figure it out in this episode.
Yeah, for me too, I felt just writing-wise, one of the strongest aspects for me that's really, I think, makes this pretty, I don't know, it sounds pretentious, like literary, right, is some of those descriptions, especially early on in different sections. It's got a serial vibe to it. You could see this as a, I guess, there's a graphic novel feel to this, to me.
I think there is a graphic novel of this by now. I think I read that somewhere.
Oh, probably. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. But I think partly what makes me think of that is graphic novels, you get, obviously, of course, you get the images and these visual depictions, but you also get the gutter space between panels. And to me, with a really great graphic novel, how the author deals with that space is often really interesting. How much do they actually explain to you, and how much is left for us to figure out in those gaps? There's a lot of short little, not even chapters here, like segments at times. Sometimes we get maybe 5 pages straight. Other times we get a little paragraph. as we're skipping through this story in this world. And so I thought that was pretty interesting approach, like V for Vendetta. I'm reading this book that I've got here, but it's like it skips around almost like it is some sort of digital technology in that sense. Okay. Like someone flipping channels. We keep going back to the same channel, but there's like this gray pixelation. Maybe at times we get this black mirror of the screen, and he uses the term black mirror all the time, which is cool. And then I think just come back to the description. In the beginnings of a lot of those, each sort of segment, he often has a sentence or two kind of that's descriptive. And I found those to be really pretty cool. Yeah, I'll read a couple here where he says, "It's the neon shutter of Ninsei. The sky was that mean shade of gray." Or "lifeless neon spelled out metro holographics and dusty capitals of glass tubing." Right, there's just so many descriptions like that. Oh. And I think really captures both the description of the real world. Gibson's created this world, and you get the sense that, I don't know, maybe as a reader, we're jacking into this world.
Yeah, I like right? that.
Like we plug in and we enter it.
Like yeah.
There's no instruction manual that comes with it. It's a really cool description of cyberspace. This is on page 51 of my copy here. It says, "Cyberspace, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation, by children being taught mathematical concepts, a graphic representation of data abstracted from the banks of every computer in the human system, unthinkable complexity, lines of light ranged in the non-space of the mind, clusters and constellations of data, like city lights receding." It's cool. A collective hallucination.
Yeah, it's
a really cool description of cyberspace. This is on page 51 of my copy here. It says, "Cyberspace, a consensual hallucination experienced daily by billions of legitimate operators in every nation, by children being taught mathematical concepts, a graphic representation of data abstracted from the banks of every computer in the human system, unthinkable complexity, lines of light ranged in the non-space of the mind, clusters and constellations of data, like city lights receding." It's cool. A collective hallucination.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you got to piece things together. And some things are just never explained. Some things are explained later. And I think this also requires like a conscious commitment to being comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Because you're reading it.
A little trust in the author.
It has this sort of, I don't know, at times discombobulating, psychedelic kind of quality to it. And I know there's moments where I don't like that. I'm here with a man who's usually kept on ice and only thawed for special occasions, like the rereading of William Gibson's Neuromancer. A man who's more than just a meat puppet. Eric, how you doing?
Hey, Chris, it's nice to be here on Life, Death, Sci-Fi. Like you said, Neuromancer by William Gibson. What a book. And in this episode, I'm sure we're going to talk about our main character, Henry Dorsett Chase, who is quite the guy, and what a cyberpunk is. I'm sure that's going to come up in our conversation. And what is a Neuromancer anyway? That's a mysterious title. And I think my favorite parts of this story were the settings. We've got Chiba City in Japan. I love that. And you and I have been to Japan in some pretty techie places. And then there's Freeside, which is just the megalopolis of the East Coast, I think. And the Tesser-Ashpool satellite home of the super rich people that kind of focus this story. I don't know if that's how I want to say that or not, but we'll figure it out in this episode.
Yeah, for me too. I felt just writing wise, one of the strongest aspects for me that's really, I think, makes this pretty, I don't know, it sounds pretentious, like literary, right? Is some of those descriptions, especially early on in different sections. It's got a serial vibe to it. You could see this as a, I guess there's a graphic novel feel to this, to me.
I think there is a graphic novel of this by now. I think I read that somewhere.
Oh, probably. Yeah, yeah. That would be interesting to see. But I think partly what makes me think of that is graphic novels, you get, obviously, of course, you get the images and these visual depictions, but you also get the gutter space between panels. And to me, with a really great graphic novel, how the author deals with that space is often really interesting. How much do they actually explain to you, and how much is left for us to figure out in those gaps? There's a lot of short little, not even chapters here, like segments at times. Sometimes we get maybe 5 pages straight. Other times we get a little paragraph as we're skipping through this story in this world. And so I thought that was pretty interesting approach, like V for Vendetta. I'm reading this book that I've got here, but it's like it skips around almost like it is some sort of digital technology in that sense. Okay. Like someone flipping channels. We keep going back to the same channel, but there's like this gray pixelation. Maybe at times we get this black mirror of the screen, and he uses the term black mirror all the time, which is cool. And then I think just come back to the description. In the beginnings of a lot of those, each sort of segment, he often has a sentence or two kind of that's descriptive. And I found those to be really pretty cool. Yeah, I'll read a couple here where he says, it's the neon shutter of Ninsei. The sky was that mean shade of gray. Or lifeless neon spelled out metro holographics and dusty capitals of glass tubing. There's just so many descriptions like that that I think really captures both the description of the real world that Case is navigating, as well as the virtual world. We get descriptions of both. That's pretty cool.
Yes, that kind of overlap. And let me jump on to your descriptions. And I want to read the first line of the whole book that is quite famous. I didn't know. Some people say it's the best opener of all time. And that's a big say, because there are a lot of great openers for books.
Right.
But this one, the sky above the port was the color of television turned to a dead channel. And for me, I'm old enough to remember dead channels. You watch TV long enough and it just goes off the air, and you get the only place that I can think of where that is now is HBO's opening, where they give this gray kind of and then HBO comes out of it. And that's where that came from, the dead channel. And I love that. Right. I love that. I would be one of those guys who said, yeah, that's one of the best openers of all time. The sky.
Yeah.
The sky. Yeah. The color of television.
I love that too. Yeah. Yeah. You can't help but look out, especially in Seattle here. Yeah. To look out, and it's often, that's often the channel our sky seems to be tuned to.
And just like you said, that's
January.
Just like you said, it's that blend between real and virtual. The sky looks like a channel. Are we in the Matrix? Maybe we are. There are some scientists. There's some scientists who say we are in the Matrix. We're living in a Matrix.
We can't prove that we're not. So there's that. Yeah. No, I love that first line too. Yeah, I don't know if it's my favorite, but boy, that's probably up there.
It's up there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I like Bradbury's "It Was a Pleasure to Burn."
Oh,
that's a nice. Another sci-fi one that's pretty solid.
We haven't even said the title. And I know what you're talking about.
Oh, Fahrenheit 451? Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good one.
William Gibson wrote this in 1984. And I thought, oh, okay. Going back, what else is in 1984? Because when we were reading our season on Mars, we went way back historically with the first Mars books that we could find. And I think this is similar because 1984 is when the internet is just starting to emerge. And we get things like Westworld, 1973, Clockwork Orange, sort of, 1962. So we're starting to get, and Star Trek with the Borg. And then, of course, much later, I don't know the author for Altered Carbon, but they have the similar case main characters and the AI. So I think just like back in the Mars thing, the world was just awakening to Einstein's relativity theory, looking in big space and small space. So we've got that, and they were playing around with that. And this, I think, is the emerging of AI, the internet, which is part of AI and all of that. So I think we're seeing another big kind of creative blossoming of that time with this and what could be.
Yeah, it seems like that. As you're saying that, this book is like Altered Carbon meets Blade Runner meets.
Oh, yeah, Blade Runner's in there. Yes. And there's a big.
But of course, this actually, does it predate Blade Runner? Blade Runner comes out later.
When I read this, both times I was getting this big Blade Runner vibe of the world building. And so I was curious. And it was Blade Runner came out almost the same year.
It's like that of Blade Runner, the real world. And then what Gibson's doing with, say, to come back to this idea of AI, that seems really prescient, right? Like he's really seeing something there in terms of cyberspace in this sort of virtual world. That seems really visionary in a lot of ways.
I agree. And I think that's why this book has lasted so long. It is a book that people look back to and like us and read again and say, oh, wow, this has something to tell us. It even takes it farther than we are now.
It seems like we're headed towards some version of this future.
It feels creepily close.
This main character, Case, is a hacker who's got into some trouble in his hacking, kind of. I can't remember exactly. Did he take a cut? He did something he wasn't supposed to do, stole something. And was it some gangsters or something? They took away his ability.
They biohacked him. They didn't kill him. They just biohacked him. Took away his ability to do any kind of hacking, which is jacking into cyberspace. So he's just wandering around in Chiba City waiting to die.
Yeah, he's a drug addict as well. And so he's damaged. He needs a new liver, a new pancreas. It's at this moment that he's sought out by Molly.
Molly Millions.
She's a cyborg. Yeah. So she's got some sort of modifications, cool Wolverine-like blades that come out of her. Is that how you picture that as well?
A feminine fingernail blade kind of things.
Blades that come out of her, come out of her fingers, is that right? And then she's got these sort of glasses that are lenses that kind of go, they're like sewn into her, around her eye sockets. And metallic, kind of reflective.
I see her as a slight woman who has these augmentations, and she can adjust her abilities. So she can be hyper fast, powerful, and all of that. She's an assassin. She's a killer.
Yeah, badass. Yes. What is it, like a ninja for hire?
Yeah, there you go.
Character. Yeah. I picture him more like aviator glasses. Well, almost like a Geordi from Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
Kind of thing, right? Yeah. Where you can't see, not on a strip like that, but I picture them like aviators, but they have all those abilities that Geordi then has, although he's blind. But I get the sense she's not. But then this is
how dare you? Geordi is not blind. He puts on those glasses, and he is more than sighted.
No, with the glasses on, but without him, he's blind.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. I just wanted to get a LeVar Burton mention.
Yeah, he's such a cool guy.
I love that guy. And plus, but he ended his podcast. RIP. Yeah.
He's off onto another project, I'm sure.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I really enjoyed his podcast. Been listening to that for, gosh, quite a few years now. I think like 7, 8 years, something like that. Yeah. I know, like once a week, all those seasons. That's strange with things like that are part of your life for many years and then it's over. Yeah.
The only thing that we can really depend on is the thing that stays the same is change. Yeah. Everything changes. And you're experiencing that with LeVar Burton. You have a connection.
Yeah. Even if you were to freeze yourself and just be thawed out every so many years, there would still be change.
Yeah.
This is where it gets a little bit convoluted, I think, for me. So Molly's hired, they're hired by Armitage, this other character. He's a
military, very strict in his way. He's not a nice guy. He just wants to get the job done. Somebody who I wouldn't trust, but seems to have his finger on all the buttons that would make this heist that they're about to go on. What I think we're talking about here is when they're getting the crew together and they're going off to make some kind of a heist. What are they going to get? They don't even know.
Yeah, to make that heist, they've got this some money and different things, and they are able to restore, give Case, I think, some new organs that they tell him if he does any sort of drugs, he'll automatically immediately die or something.
Wait.
And they are able to restore his ability to
act. This is how I read it. Let's see if you agree.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money getting him back into shape so he could jack in and do his amazing stuff. This is what he's known for. He can do amazing stuff in cyberspace. And that's what the Yakuza took away from him. So what they do is they restore this ability so he can do this, but they take away his ability to do drugs because he can do as many drugs as he wants and then nothing will happen. But make him compliant, they have put poison sacks all over his innards. And if they're on a time thing, if he doesn't do it in time, then he'll just die from the poison that they emit.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right.
But they want him back. They want him to do his cyberpunk thing. By the way, this is a side right here, a side note. I thought it was this book that invented cyberpunk, but it's not. It's just been called a cyberpunk book. Not a term that William Gibson loves for his book. Cyberpunk is a mashup of high tech and hard living. When I first heard cyberpunk with this story, I thought, oh, invented cyberpunk? No. And at first I thought it was steampunk, because that's the one I've heard more. And I thought, how is this story steampunk? Okay, no, cyberpunk. And that now there's biopunk. So there's a lot of punks out there. Back to the summary. Our hero, Chase, the hacker, back on track. Armitage is pulling this all together and telling him where to go, what to do, all of that. But there's something in the background that, hey, this guy is not all he seems to be, and he is really somebody to watch out for.
Here's where I think the plot gets a little bit lost for me. We talked about moments where there's some, I don't know, things are maybe a little bit difficult in terms of reading what they're after early on, because they're looking to, this is where I was a bit confused, right? They're trying to, what's their original mission and what do they end up trying to do? Because they're being misled by I don't know. Help me.
Okay.
Is that, was that I clear think, for you?
Yeah. They get their crew together. They're off on a mission. I think their first mission is to steal something. It's either the flatline console that they use to help them with the next job, or it's the device that was stolen from the Tesser Ashpool control center that also turns out to be a thing that gets taken away. They end up getting that, but then it's taken away by some agents that work for the government. So they lose that device, but they're going to continue on to what the main mission is.
Okay, this is they originally get what's the
Flatline's name? Dixie Flatline.
Dixie, that's what he refers to him as. Yeah, and this is his former like kind of mentor. And that's a cool idea, his consciousness that's sort of saved in cyberspace.
Is it cyberspace or is it in a console that can be let out into cyberspace, but he's connected to this console because it's just a loop for him? And yes, it's his consciousness, and he knows that he is in a loop and he can't get out. It's like a prison. And one of the things he says to Chase is, when this is over, please set me free. Ooh. Kind of harbinger for, you know, those ads that'll pop up on your screen in a few years saying, download your consciousness and you can live forever.
Right. You could do that because you've got ChatGPT on your phone, right? That you use all the time. So ChatGPT is getting very familiar with your,
I'd have to do is say yes and it's done.
Yeah. And then, down the line, you're...
And there I am. I'm with Dixie Flatline saying, let me out.
Yeah, your grandchildren's grandchildren can, let you out, play once in a while and listen to you. Yeah, talk about it. We'll probably talk about science fiction books since that'll be a big bulk of whatever is there. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's cool idea. The way he's creeped out by the laugh, too, is right.
Not quite real, not quite human.
Yeah.
Good try.
That's the way I feel about AI written those. Yeah. It's like a laugh that's not
there's
quite.
There's something a little off there.
Something off about that laugh.
How far are we going to go with this summary? We're halfway there. So they have to go to Freeside, which is that megalopolis of the East Coast of the United States. It's not the United States anymore, but it's corporations and city-states and that. And they need to get more stuff. It's like a shopping tour. They get Dixie, they get this other thing, and then it's taken away from them, and then they don't feel ready. And Armitage is going into a space where they don't even know if he's going to be able to make it or not. So he was the leader, not the leader anymore, but they're going to go for it. It's a run or something like that, and they're going to have to go to Tesser Ashpool, which is this space station that was created by these super billionaire people, have all forms of tech available to them. Getting back to free space, in free space, we meet another guy who's on the raid or part of the crew. His name is Riviera. And out of all of the characters in this story, Riviera creeps me out the most. He is this guy who has some kind of implants or some ability to put images and create...
Creepy and unrecognizable. Thing.
There are a couple scenes in Freeside where they go to this bar and a very creepy thing happens. And it seems to me like right then the whole thing is falling apart and this isn't going to happen. But it does. They decide to do it. Oh, and one of my favorite parts is when they get the Rastafarians to help them Malcolm? Get to Tesser Ashpool in their space tugs and all of that. I love that mod. It was really cool. And of course, the backup, I forgot the Nick guy's name, who was helping him, Malcolm. Yeah,
that was cool.
I love Malcolm. Anyway, they get to SRS pool, and the whole point of the story is that Wintermute, who has been this kind of shady character pushing him along the way through the whole story so far, wants to meet up with Neuromancer. And these are AIs. They're fully conscious AIs, and they have a plan. And then you find out how this all happened in the Tesher S pool place, because Lady Three Jane, I guess, is the third copy of Lady Jane, who was the original Tesher Ashpool person, but this is the third copy of her, wanted to create these AIs to help them make decisions of their vast empire and merge with the biological. So it'd be like a thing. But she made one for her and one for her husband, or one for somebody else in the family. So there are two. Now these two AIs want to merge, and Lady Three Jane is there on the station with Riviera and this other kind of ninja guy. And so Chase and Molly are guided by Wintermute, who wants to do this merging. And so Lady Jane and her bodyguard and Riviera are in this room, and she has the key to make this happen. Wintermute and Neuromancer is not sure, I think, whether he wants to do this or not, but Wintermute is, this is going to happen. And so that's the climax of the story, is when they all get together, and Molly and Chase have to deal with Riviera, who is trying to do his own thing, and Lady Three Jane is there, and I'm not sure whether she is going to help or not. But in the end, spoiler alerts, everything works out. There's some damage to Molly. Chase has to go in and break the security that surrounds Neuromancer, and the description of that in the book is amazing. And he does. They Neuromancer and meet. They work it out. Lady Three Jane is okay. Molly gets fixed up, and Chase finds himself with a bunch of money, and he is back to his old self before the Yakuza took his hacking away. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think, it's complicated.
What would you correct?
No, I mean, I think it's a complicated plot there. And I think that's one of the challenges. There's a lot going on. Many other characters that we don't even bring up that play small little roles here or there along the way. I guess I got it. This kind of brings it back to Altered Carbon, this idea that there's a really wealthy family that's behind all this, using kind of technology, some of it part cryogenic type stuff and part artificial intelligence. They're able to maintain their power and privilege over time.
Immortality. That's what they were trying to do. Blend the AI and the clones, and we can do this forever.
Yeah, pretty visionary. No doubt that Elon Musk is working on that with part of his $50 million bonus or whatever. Or was it 59 trillion? Does it matter? Billion?
If Elon isn't working on it, Jared Kushner is. He really does want to live forever, and he's got a couple billion dollars to prove it.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Is that his pet project?
He hasn't come out and said, I am going to be immortal, but he says, with the technology today. To wrap up the summary, here Chase is back in his little Chiba coffin, and he walks outside and he plugs in, and he sees across the landscape.
You want me to read that?
Yes, please.
Okay, so after he'd been successful, he says, He spent the bulk of his Swiss account on a new pancreas and liver, the rest on a new Ono Sendai and a ticket back to the sprawl. He found work. He found a girl who called herself Michael. And one October night, interesting choice there, October, right? One October night, punching himself past the scarlet tiers of the Eastern Seaboard Fishing Authority, he saw three figures, tiny, impossible, who stood at the very edge of one of the vast steps of data. Small as they were, he could make out the boy's grin, his pink gums, the glitter of the long gray eyes that had been Riviera's. Linda still wore his jacket. She waved as he passed. But the third figure, close behind her, arm across her shoulders, was himself. Somewhere very close, the laugh that wasn't laughter. He never saw Molly again.
Yes, very haunting. Mm.
Yeah, so he sees a version of himself that's now in the sprawl. Yeah, Linda's still there. Never saw Molly again. Yeah, I was hoping he and Molly would...
Yeah, you got a little note with three X's on it. Sorry.
Yeah.
That, gotta move on.
That probably makes more sense. It's more believable. But yeah, I found myself cheering for the two of them. I was hoping she'd make it out alive, and I didn't think that she would, but yeah, I was glad she did. Now, this is a trilogy, right?
Yes, but did it really start as a trilogy, or it was so successful that, okay, I'm going to write another one?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It came out a few years apart, I think.
He's also written The Peripheral, and we've talked about that here on Life, Death, Sci-Fi. It's now a movie. That's how I know it, as a movie, not a series, not as a book. Probably would like to read the book.
Yeah.
But the series, really good. I liked it a lot, and it ended in a spot where I want to see more.
Are they continuing that series?
I don't know.
I feel like maybe it was canceled.
Well, no, that's not a nice attitude.
Right. Just looking it up real quick. Yeah, it's canceled.
Just because they canceled Lamar, or he doesn't have his podcast anymore.
No, it says canceled despite season two renewal. So hopefully there's a way they can wrap it up in with season two. But
getting back to Neuromancer, we didn't talk about is Molly Millions. She had all of this cyber stuff, made Molly Millions kind of a cyborg with all of her additions. But then what happened in this story, which I thought was pretty fascinating, was one of the things that they picked up on their shopping trip was the ability for Chase to hack into her body. So he could hack into her body, he could hack into cyberspace, and he could also talk with Dixie Flatline. So he was jumping in and out of reality, Molly Millions, and cyberspace. Crazy.
Yeah, this is crazy stuff. That was super cool. That was probably my favorite sci-fi device of the Sims, this ability to, she becomes an avatar in that sense. And they can't communicate directly with each other. If she talks, he can hear her, but he can't communicate with her, but he can feel like some of her pain and things like that. He knows when she breaks her leg at some point, and he can feel that. Not that he's feeling her pain necessarily, but that something's off with her leg. He knows that she's struggling.
So she can be off doing something for the heist, and they don't have any communications except for this ability to connect that way.
She was definitely a favorite, maybe my favorite character and kind of image that's created here. I think just between the blades under her fingernails, she's a real badass fighting. It's like he's, a lot of those.
Super badass.
Which is interesting because we don't get, even though we're following Case and he's the main character and he's obviously skilled in his own way, he's plugged in at some point. I think she ends up seeing him and his, when he's got the old dermatrode things, or and he's just all curled up in the fetal position. He's urinating on himself at some point. I mean, without his catheter, he's just dead to the real world in this comatose position. And so then she takes on the role of all the action. She's the action hero.
Ah, I like that. I didn't see that juxtaposition the way you explain it. I like that a lot. And when he's tucked in this fetal position and he needed Dixie Flatline to help him with this and a Chinese hacker program, that's the thing that they had to buy and pick up.
Yeah, cool.
To this hacker device that would get him through the security fields around all of the programs that Neuromancer had around him. And the way he described this Chinese hacker program coming in, taking over and busting in, they called this security ICE. When we saw the ice was very strong around this area. How are we going to break through the ice? And that's actually a term that was made up. I'm not sure by Gibson, but somebody else made up this. ICE means intrusion, countermeasures, electronics, ICE. The Seattle Public Library did not have very thick ICE.
It's ransomware attack, victim of ransomware attack. That's true. That is true. Yeah, it seems like we're all going to need some better ice. I'm not sure I'll be in any kind of via stray light with some thick ice protecting me in the future. Yeah, probably not going to happen. I don't know if I have a great description of that. I was pulling up. I don't know where this fits in this moment, our conversation perfectly. But at some point, I wanted to read. When you are sitting in the chat being served in a Linares water or whatever from the prosthetic fist of rats, the head bartender and owner there, what will you be chatting about?
Yeah. Well, I just finished this book about time travel. And the time travel in this book was longevity. This guy, just for no reason, he wasn't dying. So this book gave me Highlander vibes. It was called How to Stop Time by Matt Haig. And really, it was this guy who was just born into this, like, I don't die, and I am very healthy, too. The only way he could really die is by violent death, I guess. Anyway, it was about his traveling through time this way. Just okay, but, you know. So this left me open for the next book, just at the time where you said, hey, look at this. You were talking about the wind-up girl, and you sent the blur about that, and it looked interesting to me. So I picked it up, and it is good. And this is one that is not cyberpunk, but it's very biopunk. You're living in a world that is corporate now. Not especially country, but corporate. And the agricultural companies of the world have either made mistakes and devastated populations of plants and animals. Now the world is very dependent on suppliers of seeds for food and all of that. There are these plagues that come through, not only for people, but for animals and for plants, and these people are just trying to together. Before, and the corporations
before,
are trying
before
to
before you go
money.
Too far. And is this going to be our next book?
Oh, sorry. You want to? Okay. And I want to say this.
Okay.
That doesn't spoil it. Doesn't spoil it. But there are spoilers in Life Does Sci-Fi. It's set in Thailand. It's set in Thailand, and they use the language and culture of Thailand really well. I lived there for 3 years. 3 years isn't very long, but I so much enjoy the sprinklings of words and emotions and culture that the author gives. I haven't checked out the author yet.
A Brazilian?
But the author had to have lived. I think that the name sounds that way, but I has to have lived in Thailand.
Don't tell me anymore.
For a long
so
time.
I
have to check it out. Oh, that was just enough. Yeah. That was a perfect teaser for you, I hope.
You're struggling to succumb to my Frankenstein pressure here.
Oh, I will read Frankenstein whenever you want. I'm ready.
Okay.
But it's going to be difficult. I read two chapters and went, oh, wow. I love the idea and everything, but the language is rich and thick and antiquated.
I've already got Frankenstein, so that one's easy for me to start.
Oh, okay. So if you can't, find it easily, then we can, our backup, okay. Our fallback is Frankenstein.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. For me, I guess my chatter here, two things, just so I have one that's sort of a recommendation. I did mention graphic novels earlier. I have those on my mind because I've been checked out a bunch from the library, but I've been revisiting because I read some of this in electronic copy when I was in Lima before, but I picked up a hard copy of Jeff Lemire. It's Lemire, Lemire. I don't know. Is it pronounced it of Sweet Tooth, which is great. Oh. Really cool graphic novel. Definitely edgier, more raw, more human than the television series, which I also really like.
My only complaint about Sweet Tooth, and I know this might sound weird, but yeah. It was a little too cute for me in some places.
Yeah, if you want not cute,
Cutie Pie.
Graphic novel. Yeah, there's nothing cute about it. It's pretty violent. It's pretty vicious. Yeah, the boy is not to the point of being awkward and homely. Yeah, none of the characters are attractive. Yeah, it's pretty old school, dark. You think dark DC, that kind of vibe. But really, yeah, really cool drawings and clever storytelling. Anyway, I'm really enjoying that. And then that's my recommendation. I think, not that this has to be, but that's what I've been into. And then, of course, I'm watching The Acolyte.
Yes. I'm on the third episode. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to finish it last night. My wife is definitely not into that. Not loving this so far.
Which also makes it kind of cheap.
I think that's a cheap.
Yeah, that's. I don't have a lot of nice things to say about it. Okay.
I'm going to take us away from the Jedi and move into another. I watched part two of Dune.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't remember.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. Did we not talk about that yet?
Not part two. No, part one, I think we did.
Well, there's some.
Yeah. See?
Yeah. That crossed my mind for cocktail chatter. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh. I love the setting. I like the visuals, but I'm not sure it's following the story that I read.
Oh, yeah. I think it just Did you read the trilogy?
I did not read the trilogy. Fine. No.
Because it dips a lot into it's weaving things in from the later books.
I was mostly fine with it up until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, me too.
That's not how I remember the confrontation with the Emperor and the princess and all of that. I love the fight. The fight was great, but I think they were trying to set up the next season, next show, and they just pulled too many strings at that.
Yeah.
They didn't just leave it in a place where you could be satisfied. It was like, what?
Yeah. I don't know if this is totally accurate, but I think I remember reading or listening. It was on a podcast, listening to how I think it wasn't clear they were going to make or support another film. Right. So another one of those stories. And so you're saying not quite, but just skip way ahead and wrap a bunch of stuff and try to jam in like this massive gap, right? Where suddenly it's much later in this story. Because the books pick up, like the next one, I think, picks up. I didn't reread that. I read it ages ago, but I think it picks up 20 years later or something. So there's quite a gap in time. And anyway, I'm with you. I thought I really loved it up until like maybe the last 10 minutes. And then I'm just like, oh, okay. And it feels like it's really taking its time and doing things in this great way. And then suddenly it doesn't. And it feels
exactly. And I bet we're not the only one.
No, I don't think so.
Who feel that way.
Yeah, definitely something I'm really glad, because I went to see it in a theater. Really cool. And actually, I rewatched the first one. So in the last 6 months, yeah, I saw the first one again in a theater and then the second one as well. And really amazing, I think, just that experience. Absolutely a cool one to see in the theater. But yeah, last 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been to a movie in a theater in years, and we love those. So we're going to have to get back into it. There's a theater close by, walking distance, that on Wednesdays for seniors, $1.
Wow. I know. I got to do that. Yeah, I think I spent between, popcorn and all that. We went and watched Inside Out 2 yesterday. And I don't know what I spent. There was like $80 or $90 or something like that.
80? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Inside Out 2, not sci-fi, but really cool Pixar movie. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. Well, come on. A little sci-fi. What's in your head?
It's imagination. It's not. It's full of
imagination. Is the cousin of sci-fi, part of the family.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's got some extrapolation there. Yeah, what if there were real living emotions in your brain that talk to each other? But
yours don't?
Not in the way they do in this film. Yeah. Although, yeah, I think anxiety definitely plays too strong of a role. Yeah, that's
in all of us.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, it's fun. Yeah, I don't know. I assume you watched the first one. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's worth a watch. I think there's a lot of. Yeah, it's one of those great films. It's got layers for the adults to enjoy too. Yeah, a little spoiler here. Yeah, pretty cool little Easter egg, where see if you can catch the reference to the Apple 1984 ad. Do you remember that one?
Maybe if you give me a hint.
I could describe it. I'm just total spoiler here, but you can have fun finding it.
Okay, I'll find
it. There's the Apple ad. It's this kind of dark room with all these total homogenous office worker figures all behind their computers. And it's got there's a big screen with someone shouting and this kind of 1984 vibe, Big Brother vibe. And this woman comes in wearing not a whole lot, wielding this kind of like Thor hammer, and she starts hitting and then throws this hammer up and this shatters the screen. So there's a little moment like that in this. Yeah, this film. So,
yeah, now I'm curious.
Cool. Okay. So there's a few little like adult references too. Yeah, and I felt like there was a moment where, what's the name of this movie? You must have seen it. There's a scene where, a film called The Network. Yeah,
yes.
And there's in this, it's in, yes. In short, it's this newscaster that gets really upset about the state of the world.
I'm not gonna take it anymore.
Yeah, he's mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. And there's a moment where a character in this kind of stands up, and his anger stands up. And I don't think it doesn't say mad as hell, but it says, I'm not going to take it anymore. And to me, it really reminded me of that movie. So I don't know if that was intentional. It's got to be intentional, right? It's cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, just some fun little adult references or adult illusions.
That's what's so much fun about those. The kids can enjoy it. The adults can enjoy it. That's a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Very relatable. Pretty cool. Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, you too. Happy Father's Day. And I guess I will see you at the Spaceman's Ball.
Life, Death, Sci-Fi.